ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Every spring, the Museum of Contemporary Art hands its galleries to the next generation. Primavera becomes a testing ground, a place where young artists bend, stretch, and spark new ways of seeing. This year's edition, curated by Tim Riley Walsh, circles around ideas of the made and the manufactured, how things are assembled, engineered, cobbled together, whether objects, identities, or whole worlds. And among the artists is Kimon Williams, whose work explores language, technology, and the digital self. Together, the exhibition feels like a snapshot of where contemporary art in Australia might be heading. Restless, funny, serious, sometimes all at once. Hi, I'm Michael Doe, and this is The Art Show. Today, I'm joined by curator Tim Riley Walsh and artist Kimon Williams to talk about Primavera. Tim, Kimon, welcome.
Hi.
Hey, nice to be here. Thanks for having us, Michael.
Now, Tim, I want to start with you. Primavera has been running for more than 3 decades. So tell me a little bit about the role it plays in setting and recording Australian art history for the artist starting out, the museum, and many of the audiences who will meet some of this work for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is such an interesting exhibition series. It's been going since 1992. It has this incredible kind of like track record, really, for kind of defining some really important voices in contemporary Australian art. Figures like Sean Gladwell, Michaela Dwyer have gone through the hallowed halls of Primavera. And so I think for audiences, it's such a great way to kind of meet the next generation, to see how practice is kind of changing and developing, how artists are kind of feeling about the present and the future.
And your edition, this year, the theme is made. And that's a really interesting word, made carefully, made industrially, but also the symbolic sense of made, the ways we're made, unmade, remade, psychologically, spiritually. So help me locate how you understand and interpret made.
I guess, like, for, I don't know, baseline artists, every day in their studio have an intimate relationship with making. And I think that is something that I grew up with. My dad was an artist. I had a studio in my house at all times. So it's kind of a very familiar space to me. And I think, you know, over the course of the development of this show, I met with almost 50 artists across the country.
Wow.
And, you know, when you're in a studio, you know, ideas are welcome. Every thought is welcomed. There isn't sort of maybe the same sort of hierarchies of thought you might have in academia or anything like that. Doesn't mean it isn't rigorous. It means that it's just sort of a different open space. And so for me, artists have that really kind of everyday relationship. And I was kind of curious, as we are kind of more and more impacted, shifted, changed by digital technology, what does it mean to keep making in the studio and having that physical, tangible relationship with material? And that was really the kind of focus that kind of started to drive the exhibition.
I want to talk about Kimon's work, but actually I want you to introduce it, Tim.
Sure.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the work and then we can throw to you, Kimon, to actually talk about it.
Well, the work is, I guess, in the context of Primavera, the show, depending on the kind of the artist's kind of interest and capacity, it does shift between maybe in development of a new work or maybe an exhibition of some recent work. In Kimon's case, sort of a series of his works that I first encountered, and I guess when I first saw his work was in 2021, and it was some works that were looking at boomerangs and their sort of appropriation by the tourist industry. And that's something that's kind of stuck in my mind. And typically those boomerangs in Kimon's work have text on them. And so when we first met, and I had sort of, you know, we had a series of meetings really, but in the first meeting when I was like, you're in the show, you know, you get the call, it's all pretty special. I brought up that exhibition and I sort of talked to him a little bit about this idea of kind of making, of industry. Now that we're in this post-industrial space, what does it mean to keep making? And Kiemann had a really clear pitch from the beginning for his work, which was he wanted to continue this development of and relationship that he had with offshore manufacturers to outsource the production of his work as a conceptual gesture. So part of the work is 999 aluminium boomerangs, and they're accompanied by this wall work, which is a sort of corporate modelling of the kind of trajectory of the artist and the work in the industry.
Let's talk more about the work, because when I saw the work, it's this collision of objects and signals. It's the aluminium boomerangs that Tim just spoke about. There's a glowing video screen, scrolling text. It's a work that feels a bit ancient, but also futuristic. And it's kind of taking this deep culture, but perhaps reframed through commodity. So it was a very curious work. I'm kind of interested in the ideas that you were trying to pull into the room. What were you trying to make visible?
Yeah, I think for me, coming out at the moment as an artist early in my career, there's a lot to confront, and there's a lot to confront artistically, creatively, and culturally. So part of that, and especially within the context of Primavera, I mean, everyone is talking about how we make things. I guess the core focus for me for this work was, how do we make ourselves? So as artists and makers, we inherit a lot of these material processes, and there are cultural lineages that tie into that as well. So for instance, for me, it's the boomerang, because that's been a symbol that, for me and many others like me, is a fraught relationship. There's something in there that is tokenistic and has sort of lost its meaning. But on the other hand, it's also this device that we've used for hunting, for ceremony, and in a very globalized sense now, it can be used for profit. So part of it for me was, how can I re-engineer this again in a conceptual way so that I could get ahead, so that I could confront the structures that maybe box us in or make it difficult to succeed, whether they're external or self-imposed.
It's interesting that you talk about this sense of making, the both of you. What does it mean to interpret and respond to the world around us? This is a very big show, 33 editions. So tell me about the kind of responsibility, the inheritance that you both have to kind of make work that really says something.
I guess, like, it's, you know, I've hinted at this, and I know we've talked about the sort of legacy of this show. I think as a curator, as a young arts worker years ago, I would look to Primavera and kind of think, you know, if I was in this seat, what would I do? And, you know, it was really important, being from Brisbane, to have a hometown hero, which I have in the form of one Kiemann Williams. And I think it's so important for me to kind of fly that flag of what I think is a really crucial and vital art scene in the context of Australian art and global art. But I think with that knowledge coming into the show, I had a real desire to kind of push some boundaries around how the exhibition and the gallery spaces are utilised. I wanted to try and generate maybe some deeper kind of conversations between artists and the works that they're presenting, and to kind of have moments of kind of transformation and, you know, experiential moments as well. And so I think for me, it was a part of kind of a mixture of knowing the legacy, thinking about what I would love to kind of see in an exhibition like this, and then also responding to the artists as their projects came up. And you're just sort of weaving this kind of delicate kind of narrative for visitors through objects. And the outcomes of it, I think, are, I'm pretty proud of it.
And Kiemann, what about you, the sense of making something that is befitting for the show?
Yeah, I think definitely, like Tim touched on, for me, there is a local community aspect to it, although it seems very personal. There is that element that, when we think about arts in Queensland and particularly in Brisbane, we do have a lot of great cultural exports. We have world-class artists here, but at the end of the day, we are struggling. There is a lack of funding. We've lost, I'd say, about 80% of the spaces that we used to have for arts. And the situation, even for local funding and council support, is very, very limited. So part of this as well for me was a gesture to, I guess, maybe confront the legacies of productivity that we as Queensland artists are expected to grapple with. So part of that for me is, yes, I'm in this show and it's an astounding honour. I mean, yeah, similarly to Tim, I used to look up to Primavera artists and that was something out of reach. But now that it's here for me and it's come at a great time, part of that I feel I owe to my community to reveal that the truth isn't always as illustrious. Success means very different things and can change at multiple points. So, yeah, in many ways, this has provided a really great platform to show ambitious new work. But I also want my community to know that that is not the standard. These things are the exception. So we need to work hard, but we also need to not focus so much on comparison or what's happening down south, because we are incredible, but we just need to back ourselves.
Mm. Well, Kimon, I want to ask you more about that, because about the world that young artists are stepping into now. It feels marked by crisis. It's a climate crisis, a housing crisis, a political crisis, a world, it feels hostile, even unlivable. So as an artist, what has that meant for you personally to make under this sort of cloud?
Yeah, it's hard. I think there's this element of there's so much going on in the world right now that what is little old me getting on my soapbox going to achieve? And I think part of that is art, for me at least, is always the thing that's allowed me to get ahead in life. It's the thing that's lifted me out of dark places in ways that I've never expected before. And so part of that for me is when we're talking about art and what it can do, there is this element of self-determinism that at the end of the day, there is a lot of crisis going on right now, but we can still tell our stories and that they are still valuable, because the moment that we stop thinking that they are, we stop placing value on ourselves. So, yeah, art has been an incredible thing that's housed stability in my life. And I think it's important to talk about the persistence required to do that, and that there's always someone waiting in the wings watching, you know, and that it's this huge enigma of an industry, but you just kind of have to keep showing up and, you know, let yourself go to that mystery, because it does come and things happen, but it requires you to put in a lot of investment and time.
Mm. And what keeps your fire burning personally?
I think you, when you just start out, there's maybe that sense of competition, of scarcity, of grappling with, oh, there's this amazing art history, what do I say? But I realized a couple of years ago that for me, I don't consider myself an artist unless I'm waking up every morning and chasing my own tail. You know, I'm not making work that I think is the best work. I'm making work that I'm just upset someone else hasn't made. So if you're not making work purely just to spite existence itself, that this thing is not the way that you wish it was, then yeah, I'm making the work for myself. It does have a purpose in a broader context, but it really is just that thing of, if you're not in love with what you do, it's just not going to work, and you need to, yeah, you need to be your own favorite artist. Otherwise, you'll lose interest quite quickly.
Mm, I love that phrase, your own favorite artist.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Art Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Michael Doe, and today I'm speaking with curator Tim Riley Walsh and artist Kimon Williams on their new show, Primavera, at the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia. Tim, I want to go back to you. The show is, it brims with energy. And it's interesting, Primavera as a concept, because it's not about creating a tidy census of young practice. It's not an encyclopedic show, it can't be. But in your process of meeting 50 or over 50, to undertaking over 50 studio visits, you've met a lot of artists along the way. So I'm really curious about what isn't in the show.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think this is kind of like, it's the blessing and the curse of an opportunity like this. You've got resources, you've got support, you've got a budget, you've got a fantastic museum, which has like this amazing, really kind of dedicated audience. But what comes with that, I guess, is, you know, the sort of seriousness of that opportunity, and you have to kind of bring it down to kind of a number of artists, which is kind of coherent in an exhibition sense. What are you trying to say? Have you got, you know, the right voices in the room to kind of articulate this? And I think that it really, for me, it became a conversation with these artists about what was kind of like prevalent and front of mind for them, and responding to, I guess, you know, thoughts, images, objects, themes that were kind of emerging in their kind of everyday studio practice. So a large part of, you know, putting an exhibition on like this is about sort of serendipity in a sense. Are you meeting these people at the right time in the work that they're making? Perhaps what their, where their energy is directed is towards a body of work that is just maybe not sort of in the same place that previous work had been. And that's okay. That's not, it's not a critique about sort of anyone's position. It's more just, I think, that's the sort of joy of this process. It's a hard process. I think it's especially for the artists who kind of go through, you know, studio meetings where maybe, you know, there isn't sort of like a really clear outcome. But I think for me, the kind of energy and the power of it is when you sort of meet somebody at the right time and they have this idea that just really resonates with you. And I think at various points across the development of this show, there were these really powerful moments where I just felt, oh, wow, this person is onto something, and this is really kind of connecting with perhaps a certain sort of perspective or thought that I had about what I wanted the exhibition to be. So a curator's role is kind of this sort of gentle dance. And I think, you know, Kimon's really kind of unique in that he, as well as being an artist, he is a curator. And so I think he can kind of, maybe he might want to sort of chime in and reflect on the sort of curatorial process. But I think it's those sort of little moments of serendipity. And that's the sort of thing that I think you have to chase sometimes. If you get too latched onto one perspective that you just have to carry through, then you lose the flexibility for when opportunity just kind of comes up as part of a research process.
And Kimon, what was your sense? How did the work change with time? And is there anything you had to leave behind?
Yeah, it's kind of been one of those things, I think, when you, especially when you're grappling with something that is across multiple years of practice. So the work that I'm showing is a restaging of the show Tim was talking about earlier from 2021. So there is kind of like, you're, I don't know, it feels like you've been called for like an all-stars, and it's like, okay, if we had more money and time, what would we do with it? How would we reinvent what was being said then and translate it to what I'm feeling now? And yeah, part of that for me was, okay, I wanted to move away from just the object and much more into the gesture. So the vast quantity of the boomerangs in the space representing the physical weight of what a practice requires and its unpaid labor, time, sanity, all of these things that are really hard to make tangible without just putting it in space and saying, deal with it. So yeah, it was really just pumping that productivity up to the extreme to, I guess, almost in a way parody or try to subvert this idea that the more successful you are, the more you should do, and how now that we have more technology that's more advanced than ever before, then somehow the goalpost has moved and we also need to be more productive to match that technology. When personally, I'm the kind of artist that I see something and I'm like, I love this because it's so simple, or something happens and I want to reduce it and make it more refined. But for some reason, the neurotransmitters just don't get the message. And I think that's the perfectionism and the striving to always do better that is inherent in being a creative, right? Part of the reason I wanted to make this work was to just draw a line of what had come before and what is to come and how we're going to change the way that we do things going forward.
I want you both to indulge me for a second. I mean, you've been doing it this entire interview. Primavera, spring, opening, budding, this is the beginning. And so if you can cast your minds, where do you want to end?
I need to sit down for this question. You're talking, Michael, about like the future of our careers, or
however you want to take this.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, like, I think for me, like, talking about sort of, you know, as the kind of quote unquote curator in this particular situation, I get so much joy and fulfillment from working with artists. And you know, you're always told to kind of think about your 5-year plan, your 10-year plan, etc. Over the course of my career, I've just followed my nose, and sometimes I feel a little bit like a dog chasing a car. I don't really know what I would do when I catch it, but like, I have this ambition, I have this understanding that I love to support artists and I love to kind of realize exhibitions. I would love to keep doing that. And that's sort of as much as I let myself envision, if I'm being honest.
Kimon?
Yeah, this is going to sound a bit weird, but I want to be able to be the kind of artist that actually interfaces with the industry as little as possible. I think for me, just having the boundaries and having the resolve, so yes, my work has gotten me places, and in many ways it's kind of like a car, like a vehicle. But I've realized that, you know, while I'm young I've got my piss and vinegar. I actually don't know what that means, but I assume it means strong. I've kind of just turned myself into this sort of Lightning McQueen figure where it's like, yeah, I'll take another race. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do another one. I've got one more in me. When actually I don't want that at all. I think I'd much rather be, do you guys know Brum? He's this cute little, yellow convertible, like puppet car. He's from the 90s in this like British show. And, he just somehow solves all of the problems of this small town just by driving around and going, over and over. And I just like, whatever that is, the joyfulness, the whimsy, the carefree, but still valued and still having a place in community. I think that's the dream of an artist, is that you can just come and you can go.
I think as well, like the work came on in the show, like that, you know, your vibe of like leaning into, you know, this opportunity and scaling it up to this level. Like, I think you're taking those steps, which is kind of exciting, you know?
Towards Brum.
Towards Brum, yeah.
Tim, Kimon, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
It's been a delight.
You've been listening to curator Tim Riley Walsh and artist Kimon Williams speaking about this year's Primavera, Young Australian Artists at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney. It's on until the 8th of March, 2026. The art show is produced by Sky Kirkham. I'm Michael Doe, and this is my final show for the year. Thanks for keeping me company in the strange, wonderful world of art. Next week, Rosa Ellen takes you into Dangerously Modern, where Australian women remade Europe, 1890 to 1940. But until then, take care, and remember, keep art close. It has a way of finding you when you need it the most.